Hi, I'm Asha Tomlinson.
And I'm David Common.
And we're hosts of CBC Marketplace. We're award-winning investigative journalists that want to help you avoid clever scams, unsafe products, and sketchy services.
Our TV show has been Canada's top investigative consumer watchdog for more than 50 years, but this is our first podcast.
CBC Marketplace podcast is available now on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast. That's the sound of a crush of trucks converging at the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan last fall. Tens of thousands of Afghan migrants and asylum seekers were forced out of Pakistan. The government had suddenly set a deadline of November 1st. Foreigners without proper documents needed to be out of the country by then. That included 1.7 million Afghans. The initial chaos of those days may have subsided, but the fear of a further crackdown has not, and there is another deadline that has just passed that's causing more worry for those waiting on word from Canada on their refugee applications. And you can feel it at this market on the outskirts of Islamabad, Pakistan's capital, a market that is frequented by many of the Afghans living in that country, a lot of them without papers and virtually in hiding. Our South Asia correspondent, Salima Shivji, is here with more. Salima, hello.
Hello.
You were walking through that market that we just heard sounds from a few weeks ago.
That's right, Matt. And you could smell the freshly baked Afghan bread. You could hear it there, the knocking on the tandoor oven as that was being pulled out of that oven. There was a small crowd at the stand. But whenever you try to speak with some of the Afghans at the market, the first thing they say, of course, to a foreign media crew, is an emphatic, no, we're not migrants. We were born on the Pakistani side of the border. And they say it as they're looking around them, nervous, to check to see if anyone is listening or if any police officers are around.
What did they tell you about what life is like? I mean, that's a really gripping scene in terms of them looking around nervous. What do they say about how their life is unfolding?
Well, the fear is really pervasive. One of the Afghan migrants told me she's haunted by the crackdown from Pakistan authorities last November. I'm not naming her for her safety, but she is a young mother with a four-year-old girl. She has a husband. They are all in Pakistan on expired visas because renewing visas is just too expensive.
In November, Afghans were not allowed to live here. It was a dangerous situation for us as well. We couldn't live here. The situation was quite chaotic here. I am sick, but I cannot go to the doctor. We're running out of cash. I couldn't get admitted to the hospital. We were told that your visa has expired. I cannot remember anything. I cannot study while facing these issues. I got Alzheimer's.
So she has early onset Alzheimer's at just 28 years old, and she's paralyzed with fear, Matt, that her family will be picked up by police and deported after being unable to produce proper documents, and also just so fearful of what could happen to them if forced back to Afghanistan with the Taliban in power, no school for her or her daughter past primary school. So the young family mostly just stays in, confined to their room.
How common is that, that people are living, Afghans are living out of sight to avoid the Pakistani police?
It's very common. They worry that if they're caught outside, they will be detained and arbitrarily sent to the border. Many say that even with a proof of registration card, which is issued by the Pakistan government to Afghan refugees, it's what allows some of them to legally stay in the country. Many say it doesn't matter. The Afghan migrants say that most police officers don't care about that card. Here's Sabir Saba. He's 52 years old, and he fled Afghanistan after the Taliban took Kabul in August 2021. He says even hell would be more pleasant than his life in Islamabad.
My life is ruined. I just want to die. Nothing goes in our favor. I was working for the military in my country. I had a very well-respected job back in Afghanistan. And now I am working here as a cleaner, and I'm being paid 15,000 rupees. I live here along with my family. I cannot leave my room easily, despite having a proof of registration card. It's not accepted by the police. If you have money, then you can survive easily in Pakistan. But if you don't, then it doesn't matter how many documents you have. They're still useless.
So another young man told me much the same thing. Saif has a proof of registration card. He was born in Pakistan. And yet he was so scared to speak with me, Matt, that he asked me to walk down another alley when too many people gathered around us listening to our conversation. And then the 31-year-old told me that police in Pakistan used to respect his ID, but he says no longer. Now they either tear it up or ask for a bribe, he says.
So he was born in Pakistan. Why does an order like this apply to him?
Well, many of those forced to return to Afghanistan had never set foot in the country with no relatives waiting for them. But that's the thing. So many Afghans, even though they were undocumented, had spent years, decades in Pakistan. Of course, first coming when the Soviets invaded Afghanistan in 1979. And then there were several subsequent waves in 2001 and recently in 2021. After the Taliban took power, at least 600,000 Afghans fled to neighboring Pakistan. An estimated three quarters of the 1.7 million Afghans without legal papers in Pakistan were born in Pakistan. Some don't even speak Pashto or Dari, they speak Urdu. And I was walking around one of the Afghan settlements, a slum area on the edge of Islamabad. So you can hear the children playing there, they're laughing. They're basically running away from me, actually, sort of teasingly. I asked a group of about a dozen men in that neighborhood. They're all in their 20s. All were born in Pakistan. And they say they have very few rights and they live in a constant state of uncertainty. The neighborhood is now half empty. Many families have picked up and left for Kabul during the crackdown. And other nearby Afghan settlements were bulldozed and torn down by authorities.
What does the public in Pakistan think of this? What's the reaction been watching the government crack down on these Afghan migrants?
Well, you know, the reaction has actually been quite muted. When that order came down from Pakistan authorities ordering the Afghans without legal papers out, there wasn't a lot of outrage from the public. There was mostly silence, you know, a bit of localized opposition to the deportation order, but not much more. And there are really deep worries about wider anti-Afghan sentiment flaring up, fueling more fear among the Afghans still in Pakistan, whether they've been in the country for just a few months or a few decades.
But there has been, and we've talked about this on the program, there has been condemnation internationally of those moves.
Yeah, that's right. There was an uproar from rights groups, from NGOs, and from the United Nations Human Rights Office, who called the expulsions cruel and a clear violation of both international human rights and refugee laws. Spokesperson Ravina Shamdasani warned of a potential human rights catastrophe.
We are very worried that those who are deported face a whole host of human rights violations, torture, arbitrary detention, severe discrimination, lack of access to basic economic social needs. In particular, women, who of course are being completely, the attempt is to completely erase them from any public presence in society.
The accusation from many quarters was that Pakistan, despite talking about all illegal foreign nationals, really wanted to target Afghans for political reasons, to voice displeasure with the Taliban government, and to deflect from internal issues like the faltering economy and a spike in militant attacks in Pakistan.
How have Pakistan authorities explained that or responded to those claims?
Well, Pakistani authorities insisted the move wasn't targeting Afghans and that it was for security reasons. They were claiming that terrorists were entering the country while posing as Afghan refugees. But this isn't the first time Pakistan has tried to crack down on the rights of refugees.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart McLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share two hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
What do we know about how many people have been forced to leave Pakistan?
Well, the numbers are really quite staggering. The most recent data shows more than 500,000 Afghans have crossed the border back into Afghanistan since mid-September of last year. Just shy of 30,000 of them were forcibly deported after that November 1st deadline. But despite international opposition, Pakistani officials have remained firm. They are not backing down on this. Pakistan is not a signatory of the Geneva Convention or the UN Refugee Convention. The country did just extend one deadline, and that was for registered Afghan refugees. So these are the ones with official cards with the UNHCR. They can now stay until the end of the month. And Pakistani officials have really been extending that deadline month by month for those people over the last couple of years. But there is no word on any other changes to the policy.
How much of that silence do you think is because of the recent elections in Pakistan?
Well, the country is most definitely distracted politically. Pakistan embroiled in a tumultuous election campaign. Mm-hmm. There was so much uncertainty. As you know, we've talked about it over the makeup of the new Pakistani government weeks after the vote. A lot of anger in the streets of Pakistan as well, with allegations of widespread vote rigging. But many of the Afghans still left in the country are now bracing themselves for what happens to them now that the election is over.
So have there been legal challenges to counter this deportation order on behalf of those Afghan migrants who, as we heard, were born in Pakistan?
Yeah, there are some halting efforts to mount legal arguments against it. I spoke to one lawyer, Umar Gilani. He's a constitutional lawyer based in Islamabad. And his argument is that Pakistan's constitution includes birthright citizenship. So that's a clause that anyone born in the country, except for the children of diplomats or invading armies, is automatically a citizen with all of the rights that go along with citizenship. So, you know, Canada has this guarantee, mm-hmm. the United States does too. And most of the countries actually who have this concept of automatic birthright citizenship are in North and South America. But Pakistan has it too, says Gilani.
So if Pakistan still has birthright citizenship, then these people are not Afghans, they're actually Pakistanis. That is the argument which I've taken, and many of these people are not just second generation Pakistanis, they're third generation Pakistanis. Their grandparents came.
So that's the argument that he's making. Has he had any success in actually arguing this in court?
He has argued one case on behalf of one citizen using the birthright citizenship clause. It was in front of a Pakistan high court, and he won that case. So Gilani finds that encouraging. But hearings in front of Pakistan's Supreme Court are pending. And of course, legal battles, especially constitutional ones, take time. And time is not on the side of those Afghans already living in hiding and fearing deportation. And of course, Gilani's argument doesn't apply to all of the Afghan migrants without papers, many of whom arrived after the Taliban took power again in August 2021.
And so what about those others, the undocumented Afghans who are waiting for, and we've talked about this on the program as well, countries like Canada or perhaps the United States to approve their immigration applications and get them out of Pakistan?
Yeah, that's right. There's a long wait on that front, and there's a lot of frustration mixed with fear because that wait has been so long for so many. Pakistan, after pressure from U.S. officials last fall, extended the deadline for those Afghans without papers waiting for resettlement in a third country, and that was until the end of February. After that, they would have to leave or pay a hefty fine, $100 a month to a maximum of $800. And of course, as I've said, very few can afford that.
And so it's now March. What happens now?
So there's been no word on what comes next, if the fine will be enforced, if exit visas will be more difficult to get. But I want you to take a listen to another person I spoke with, Husnullah. He used to work for Afghanistan's central bank, tracking money launderers. He says most definitely he would be a target if he were forced back to Kabul. He's waiting to hear from the United States on his permanent residency application for himself, his wife, and his three sons. And Husnullah told me most days he's just filled with dismay.
We are a circle of friends, four or five friends. Every single day we are talking about the end of February. What will happen? There are millions of questions coming to our mind. What will happen? Will they take us and take out from this country? Will some other country do some help for us? Will there be a source of like financial source to help our children? Because this month is the last month I am taking my children to the school. Because after this month I cannot afford to pay the school fees.
So the sense among all the Afghans I spoke with is that Pakistan's policies change abruptly and constantly. Mm. It's unpredictable, and that makes it so much harder on them, they say.
There are Afghans who worked with the Canadian forces as well. How are they feeling in this climate?
Well, not great. I met up with Muhammad Yunus Nasimi. He's a former contractor for the Canadian Armed Forces in Afghanistan. He had a green badge at CAF, the military base in Kandahar, meaning full security clearance. Except now he's waiting for a security check to be approved by Immigration Canada under the special program for Afghans who helped the Canadian government. Nasimi has been waiting for more than 2 years.
You're stronger, man.
I'm stronger, man.
Well, who is Dan?
So, cartoons there. His six kids are stuck in one of two hotel rooms all day watching those cartoons instead of going to school. And the crackdown from Pakistani authorities has really unnerved Nasimi. His wife and one of his daughters were stopped by police once in the weeks after the deadline when they were trying to go to the pharmacy to get some medicine, and they had to pay a bribe to avoid getting deported.
As you know, that we have left Afghanistan because our lives are a threat. So this crackdown was, I don't know what was for the Pakistani government, but it was too hard for us because they could tie us and give us to the Afghan current government who are looking for us. We have been explaining this to the government of Canada, but nobody's hearing us. It is unbearable. It's very hard. Like, there are sometimes you don't have words for that. How to describe this?
You can hear it in his voice. He said that idea, nobody's hearing us. He feels ignored.
Yeah, very much so. And he says often the only news he gets on his file's progress is a rote email from Canada's immigration department. One email came right after the crackdown was announced, and it warned him and his family to stay in his guest house. Another encouraged him to take whatever lawful steps he thought necessary to keep his family safe. So Nasimi just says he finds all of that very discouraging. And on top of what Pakistan is doing to undocumented Afghans like him, there's the fact that Canada is very close to its stated limit of accepting 50,000 Afghan refugees. That limit was previously 40,000. It was surpassed, and then it was raised to 50.
We are seeing Pakistani problem, and we are seeing the limit that the Canada is going to reach. So our worry is that what will be our future? What is going to be happening to us? Because for us, it's like on one side is Canada, and on the second side is death. You think it's easy living like this, living in crackdowns that we are facing in Pakistan, fearing every day? I don't sleep overnight just to guard these kids.
On one side is Canada and the other side is death. And in the meantime, you have the kids who are in the hotel room. Instead of being in school, they're watching cartoons all day. The adults can't work. It's just kind of a waiting game.
Yeah, a waiting game filled with uncertainty. And it's like that for others as well, of course. I had chai with a group of four former interpreters for the Canadian Army. They were pulling out certificates they received from the armed forces over the years that they worked with them in Kandahar. They pulled out letters from Immigration Canada confirming their work and all the good that they did for the government of Canada. All of that, they say, is inconsequential to the Pakistani police. Canada, the U.S., and other embassies did issue letters of protection to undocumented refugee claimants when that crackdown was looming last fall, but most Afghans say authorities don't really recognize those.
If you stay here like for 22 months in the same location in two rooms, so, I mean, it's definitely like a jail for us, you know. My case is an expedite in priority, and I haven't seen anything.
You know, that's what we're getting the message that, you know, keep on telling us that your case is marked as urgent processing and we are still waiting and waiting. It's a long-lasting wait.
An interminable wait, they say.
What has the Canadian government said about all of this?
Well, I received a lengthy statement from Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship Canada, and the department says that more than 47,000 vulnerable Afghans have already made it to Canada, and 17 charter flights have left Pakistan since November 1st, the expulsion deadline set by Pakistani authorities. Others also got out on commercial planes. But the department says it's really the Pakistan government's prerogative to set their own entry and exit requirements and any deadline. The IRCC says it is doing its best to work with the Pakistanis to try to streamline the process, and that it is treating each case, each application of vulnerable Afghans with urgency. But I got to say, it doesn't feel that way to the former contractors and interpreters that I spoke with. You know, they're all fathers, and they were telling me about the difficulties explaining to their children why they are still waiting in a guest house in Islamabad while others have flown out on previous flights. Their kids ask them, "What have you done wrong, Dad?" And one of the interpreters says that his six-year-old son just the other day decided to start fasting until they got on a flight to Canada.
Salima, thank you very much for this.
You're welcome.
Salima Shirji is CBC's South Asia correspondent.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.